I think it's about providing that community space and then pretty basic workout. We saw something happen in the industry. We wanted to put that out there. Why are people, unless it connects somewhere, no, people aren't going to pay for that.
Great. So Anthony, good to see you again. It's been a while. I wanted to do this conversation with you. You have built one of the best media companies in our space, which is now a fund as well, and you are investing in companies too. Everybody has been listening to your podcast as well. So super excited to do this. The first time I saw you guys, you wrote something about Terra in the very early days of Terra, and our traffic blew up. So I started wondering, what is Feed Insider? So that's the first time I saw you. But let's, I was just doing some research about you, and I saw that you were in the military in the past. Can you walk me through a bit of that? Like, what did you do in the military?
Yes. So crazy times. I enlisted in the Marines while I was still in high school in the Marine Corps. And my goal was, I joined what's called like the delayed entry program. I was going to go finish high school and then go to the Marines. And I left right after graduation. I was still, I just turned 18. And my goal was spend 20 years in the Marine Corps. And I wanted to go infantry, try to do as much stuff as I can. But then while I was away at boot camp, my dad was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer. So I found out, you know, he was sick and was going to die at some point. And it completely changed my trajectory of life. And that's like honestly how we got here today. It was, I was literally, my plan was 20 years and then I wanted to join the FBI. I had like a big thing where I wanted to be in the FBI. I don't know, really know where that came from. Movies growing up or something, but yeah, so I enlisted in the Marines, and well, on boot camp graduation, I found out that they didn't tell me why I was there, because you can't just leave, go home. So they kept it a secret until graduation day. And then at graduation day, I found out. And that really changed my trajectory. I still went on to schools and I still went on to do a certain amount of my time. But as he got sicker, I got to come home and spend time with him as he was going to pass. So I ended up not fulfilling my dream of going infantry and getting, you know, hopefully special forces or things, but I still got to go through a lot of cool trainings and do a lot of fun stuff there.
That's very unfortunate, man. I've seen some of the stories earlier about this.
Yeah.
Did this push you into trying to become healthier yourself, or did you have something different?
Yeah, it was the first part. Well, I was always into fitness. I did my senior project in high school on fitness as being like a trainer, shadowed people. I was a high school athlete. My brother and I, it was all we wanted to do always from when we were, you know, 15, 16, started with like bodybuilding and other stuff and kind of got on there from football. But it was the first time that I looked at fitness as health, because seeing my dad, big, strong Italian father who was great and fine when I left. And when I graduated boot camp, he was, you know, had just had brain surgery, was 50 pounds lighter and just was just so different. You realize that if you don't have health, nothing else matters. And that was the first kind of thought process around me thinking about things need to change around health. And then it was after I got out of the Marines, you know, I needed to provide for the family and make money. You know, my dad was the main breadwinner in the family, and I was come home, make money, kind of be with the family and contribute. And the only thing I ever thought about, knew, enjoyed was fitness. So that's when I got started becoming a trainer, doing all that stuff. And it was the push for that was, man, if I'm not healthy, I don't know.
Nothing else matters. Right?
Yeah.
And then I believe you started the gym as well.
Yeah. So started training people in parks, doing events, train people in their homes, put, you know, everything you could to make a buck. Cause I was an uneducated Marine that, you know, was in his early 20s. And, unfortunately we live in America where if you get sick, there's medical bills. So it was like, do whatever I could. And I loved it from the start. Got, you know, every personal training certification, every workshop, every thing I could do, and then started training people in every place that I could and building up an awareness and a brand. And then my brother and I, well, we opened our first gym, and it was crazy. It was 12,000 square feet. It was an indoor skate park that we met, and we met the guy. I was looking for space, didn't even know I didn't know anything. Didn't know what a lease was, didn't know how to do it, didn't know about insurance, didn't know anything. But it was really about, how can I build this business? And I met this guy. He's like, oh, I have this small space. It was in a indoor ice skating rink. Above it was a skate park. And he had like a, you know, 500 square foot room. He was like, you can rent this room. I was like, great. And then he's like, well, I also have the upstairs. And we went upstairs and it was a full blown skate park that was massive. It was like an airport hang. I was like, oh, I'll take this. And that was the start of it.
Nice. What was the, like when you started your own gym, what was the realization then? Like, was it that, like that worked you basically to start Fit Insider? Was it that you could see that a lot of people needed to go through a lot of awareness and training to understand how to train their own bodies? Or what was the problem that you are witnessing there?
Yeah, it was it's the basis for everything we write about. You see it and you hear it when Joe and I talk. It's most people don't realize fitness, wellness, and health is move more, eat less. Pretty basic stuff. Movement, health, move your body, kind of ease your mind, all that stuff. It's even on the merch that we have now. And in doing that, you know, at the same time, this was still a time when fitness was go be on the elliptical for 45 minutes, go do a certain type of class, go do a thing. And I had just gotten out of the military and my background, I followed a guy named Rob Shaw and a bunch of other, you know, Kelly Starrett and all of these coaches that are very basic movement and health and like, you know, body weight, sandbags, kettlebells, move, hike, run. And that was our philosophy always. It was never look good, lift weights to build, be a bodybuilder, any of this stuff. Mm. And we were, you know, as I was meeting people that I was training in their homes and building up to opening the gym, it was moms that were like, I just had my third kid and I want to be healthy. And it was dads that were overweight, but their kid is now growing up to play baseball and they want to be able to play with them. Or it was somebody that, you know, just got a divorce and they're like, I just want to feel good again. I want to feel happy. And they're trying diets and they're trying programs and they're spending all this money on stuff. And I was like, all you have to do is the basics. And it worked. Hundreds and hundreds of members. Our gym was making. Joe at the same time was a teacher. He went and got master's degrees in education. He was a teacher and a football coach. And we live in Pennsylvania where it's really hard to get a teaching job. And he had just gotten this job. And it's like prestigious job in Pennsylvania. It's a good paying job. You can retire well. It was what he went to school for 6 years to do. So within the first month of the gym, we made more money than he would make as a teacher in a year. And I was like, you have to quit your job. He's like, I'm not quitting my teaching job. You know, I just got this job. And then he came and taught a few more classes and he was like, I'm quitting my job. So it was like you mix this level of helping people, building community, being healthy. And it was all by accident. We weren't trying to run a business. We were just trying to make money and you know, have fun and get people healthy. And because I think we approached it that way, it just took off and the community around it was amazing. And that was really the start of everything we've ever done was based off of, we got, you know, 10 people healthy working out in their homes and then 50 people in the parks and then a couple hundred people in our gyms and then created content online and got a couple thousand and then made. And as we grew, it was always like, how do we spread this information and message to more and more people? And that's what led us to Fit Insider. It was the way to impact more people is work with founders, work with other companies that are doing it. Because if we can help 50 companies, 100 companies, 100 founders, those companies can impact millions and millions of people. And that's really how we got to this point now. It was never a thing that we thought, you know, we want to be investors or we want to be build this like, you know, industry publication. It was, how do we create content that's going to help these people that will help other people?
Before we get into the specifics of Fit Insider, what do you think, based on your experience, is the future of the gym? What things need to change in people's experience within the gym? What's going to happen there?
Yeah, I have some pretty thoughts around the gyms. And this is coming from seeing what's working now and what's scaling now, but what also has worked always. I think for most people, it's about building functional movement. It's not CrossFit. It's not lifting heavy weights. Like, I love CrossFit. We used to own CrossFits. It's something I've done a long time. I don't think it's CrossFit, lift heavy weights, Olympic weightlifting. I don't think it's, you know, boutique fitness specifically. I think it's a mixture of all of that. How can you build a accessible, exciting program and do it with a community? It's about bringing people together to work out. And that's what's missing. The reason that people are back in the gyms, the reason that people are doing what they're doing is because it's fun to be around other people. It's proven that working out with partners and friends and being there helps you work out harder, stick to your routine, go and be at the gym more. So I think it's about providing that community space and then pretty basic workout. I think it's kettlebells, body weight, movement. I think it's sandbags and medicine balls. I think it's running around and doing stuff. So but it doesn't have to be as extreme as some of the options out there. And that's it. And I don't think it's, you know, franchises and one boutique. I don't think it's one specific modality. Pilates is up, Pilates is down. Yoga is up, yoga is down. And everyone can have their option. But in terms of the future of the gym, if I were opening a gym, it wouldn't be one specific boutique studio. It wouldn't be one specific modality. It would be an all-encompassing place that we can do all of that while focusing 100% on community. And we posted not too long ago on LinkedIn about the events we used to run, these yoga events, these pop-ups, these things. I would be doing that if I was a gym owner. I would be doing free yoga in the park. I would be doing run groups. I would be doing meetups and free classes, building as big, as massive a community as you can, and then bringing those people and giving them a space to feel comfortable, get a great workout in, and spend the time in your facility. And it doesn't have to be anything fancy.
So you're focusing 100% on the community. That's very interesting. Fit Insider, how did you guys start? I believe the first thing I saw personally was the newsletters. Was it the newsletters? And like, how did you get the first few people to actually look at?
It was while we were running a different company. Fit Insider was like a side project. And Joe and I, we've always loved creating content. And we've always loved the space. And having been trainers and coaches and been on the ground running gyms and doing everything else and kind of working our way up, you know, we thought our perspective was unique. And for us, it was once a month, I think it started. And the first issue was on, I don't even know, like vegan food or something, the random thought process.
How did you know what to write in that first one?
No idea. Just what we thought the content was. It was like, we saw something happen in the industry. We wanted to put that out there. And I sent it to five friends. I remember it was from my email. I sent it to five friends. It wasn't like in MailChimp. It wasn't like organized. And then we did it again and it was like 20 people because they forwarded it around. And then we set it up in MailChimp and kept going. And it has evolved a ton, but it was really, Joe is phenomenal at spotting trends and information and like saying, we should cover this. We should look at this. And then distilling that down to, here's something going on. And then more importantly, here's our perspective on it. Here's what it means if you work in the industry. It's not just news. There's a million places you can read news. And they pop up every day now someplace, most likely copying our content, repurposing it, sharing the information that we do, trying to be the next thing that can like race to the bottom of regurgitating fitness and wellness news, which is great. But it's about deep dives and analysis and what does this mean? And it was honestly consistency. We've never, up until last month, we've never spent a dollar on marketing. We've never promoted in any way other than just posting it online. And it grew tens of thousands of people over time. Every month, it would just keep growing. And it was always trying to say, when we were founders, when we were building, what did we want to hear? What information was helpful to us? And that's why we launched the podcast, because it's always helpful to hear other founders explain how they did it or why they did it. It's why we launched the job board and why our jobs board is free. Because it's always important to hire, and if you're a founder, making sure you bring the right people and the right hires and the right content. That's why I post Friday job roundups for free. It was always, how do we build the most impactful content for these founders, for these investors, for this community? And it's why most of our stuff, all of our stuff out there right now, at least, is free.
So you're saying at the beginning it was five people and then it was all referral based? So most people were actually sending it between their friends?
Yeah. And that's how we've grown to date still. All of our growth is referral based. People sending it to other people, you know, it'll be funny, you know, an issue will go out and it'll show this email address opened it 1,000 times. And it's because the CEO forwarded it to their entire company and everyone on that company reads it. Or, it'll be sent around and then from the same company email address, in a week, you'll get 250 people signed up. Again, they're sending it around, they're sharing it. So up until we just started doing some version of marketing last month, like I said, it's been 100% organic kind of word of mouth growth. And we did that on purpose. We could have grown really fast and tried to get, you know, a million readers. But for us, it was, we want every right exact person that wants to read this, that is a founder, investor, entrepreneur, operator, someone that works at these companies, someone that wants to build. We want them to find us and spend the time. And that's also why most of the people that get the email open.
You know, it's funny. You mentioned consistency, which is something I wanted to ask you as a follow-up of this question. I have been blocking on all the newsletters. The only newsletter I read today is Fit Insider. And it's so crazy that you are so spot on the data that you have every time in the newsletter, which is unbelievable. Like, how can you give me some details? How do you guys do that? Like, how do you find the content in the first place? How do you know it's going to be interesting? And like, how can you be the first ones that go out and report these things?
And there, I wish there was like some secret system that we have, but it's just the time. We know we have spent building the kind of playbook of how do you source this content. It's out there. You can find it. You just have to know. And that's it. It takes time and effort, and it takes a team of people that know the space and are dedicated to the space and are really looking for value. And that's it. I mean, it's, you know, you should see our Slack channel. It's absolutely bananas. Study after study after, you know, news and information. And also we're really invested in trying to, like you said, very early on, we mentioned Terra. Yeah, that's our goal, is to be able to mention companies first and see them early and identify them early and highlight them early and talk about this trend early. Because you can go back to, you know, looking at some of the stuff that is scaling today on high performance health and at home testing and some of these precision companies and food as medicine. 2 years ago, I wrote a report that was, this is going to happen. And then we can look back on it. And that's what it's always about, kind of putting our best thoughts out there and having that public record of like, we saw this, we thought about this very early on. And we're trying to find better ways to do it, but it's really just about spending the time online, searching for it, saving the research and understanding how to do that. And honestly, Joe is the king of that when it comes to analysis and research. That's
so it sounds like the first, the one of the most important things is timing. So how fast you can get the news and let everyone know about it?
Not as much, because we don't, again, that's, it's funny, you see it every day. We'll write a report, our deep dive of the email, the main part. No one does that. Everyone does the news. They, F45 did this, Peloton did this. We do that too. But we also spend time putting together a 750 word deep dive of a topic. No one does that. And so they can't beat us to it, because they're not gonna put the time in. So we never really rush to be the media place that breaks the news. Because honestly, if it's big enough, Bloomberg, TechCrunch, like other places will break it. And then in our industry, like, I'm not gonna name names, but people and other places and other groups and stuff, they just repurpose our content. So, you know, if it's writing about Peloton's laying people off or they're building this new thing, we don't need to be the first to put it out. We want to take the time and say, what does this mean for the market? What does this mean for you? What is the analysis of Peloton is doing this? And if you see when we write, even when we write headlines, when we write the news blurbs in the newsletter, there's always a kind of what does this mean? What to expect? What now section that is spending the time explaining it. And that's what we want to do. I'd rather, you know, be fifth in line to get it out, but it gets to the right people and it adds some value besides just regurgitating that this has happened.
So it's much more about the breakdown and me getting much more information, quality information, rather than if you are being first. That's super, super helpful. Second, consistency. I think one of the most underestimated things in building any type of business is consistency. And it's basically doing the same thing again and again and again. I see your newsletter again and again and again. I haven't skipped anyone. So it's crazy that you have been so consistent over time. How did you guys manage to do that? Did you build like an infrastructure, a process? If you can give us some idea of the process, that would be very, very helpful.
Yeah. It, again, it's not something that is really well built on the back end. Some weeks we don't know what's going out until Sunday. So Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, it goes out. So it's really just about, like you said, it's consistency. It's dedication to, we're going to do it. It's going to go out no matter what. We will find a way to put it out. And that's it. Other than that, you know, we could be a couple weeks ahead on writing and we know what's going to go out. Or I think it was last week. It was Saturday. And we're like, the topic we thought wasn't going to work, it's not going to play the way we thought it would. Scrap it and rewrite it on Sunday and have it edited Monday, ready to ship on Tuesday. So it was really just about deciding that, if anything else, it's the same as my brother and I are founders our whole lives, building companies. If you own a gym, you show up on that class. I'm not canceling. I'm sick. I don't feel good. I have a broken leg. I tore my ACL. Doesn't matter. I'm showing up to teach that class. And that, you know, I mean, military, you can't just not show up. So our entire lives was building consistency and doing that. And especially I think myself, I was always, Joe was a straight A student, star athlete, and got multiple degrees and did all the stuff. He was always the organized smart guy. I, you know, barely graduated high school. So the one thing I had was do the work, show up and make it happen. And us combined, that's all we care about always. And whether it's us building companies, investing, advising, talk to the founders we work with, you shoot us a text, you want the time, you need the thing, we'll do it.
Mm. Got it. And from a business perspective, you launched the newsletter, you started doing very well, a lot of people signed up, a lot of referrals, getting more customers, more readers, let's say. Then I've seen that you added the job board that you mentioned, you added, you have a fund now as well. How are you thinking about these things? Like, what was the second one that you launched after the newsletter? And what was the reasoning of that?
Yeah, it was the podcast. And it was a newsletter first. We didn't even have a website for them. It was just the newsletter. And you had to find a MailChimp form or ask to be put on the list. And then as we kind of formalized that, then it became the podcast. And the podcast was really, we wanted to find a way to dig into why. Because the podcast format, especially, like, I always liked how I built this with Guy Raz. I think it was Guy Raz, what it is. How I built this, where they would dig into why a founder built the company. And it was always big tech companies and always big brands and always, you know, all of these companies, never something in our space, never hearing what, you know, when we talked to Whoop very early on, or Hydro, or what Athletic Brewing was doing, or, you know, Orange Theory, like hearing why the founder started the company, I think is super useful. So you could, because that's how I learned coming up as a founder. I was always, how do I hear what people are doing? Can I steal a glimpse of what they're building or see myself in them? So that was the first one. But again, it was from the angle of, if I was a founder, this is what I would want. And then the jobs board came quickly after that. And again, it was because I hated hiring. All of our companies, Joe and I built a number of companies over the years. You know, some of them had 2 employees, some of them have 70 employees. And when you get to that scale and you start to hire people and build, hiring is really hard. So it was, how do we ease that pain? And more importantly too, if you're going to work a job in marketing, and you're going to work a job in software and IT or whatever, HR, why not do it at a company that's doing cool stuff and making people healthy? If I'm going to work at a bank or I'm going to work at Terra, why not work at Terra? Doesn't make, you know, what? So that was our thought process too, is like, bring people into the fold, help them come into the industry, get started, work in it. And then hopefully eventually they start a company, they build a thing, they do something cool. And then we acquired Well-To-Do, which was the newsletter based out of the UK. And that was for us looking at Europe and the UK's massive opportunities, global news in general, but Europe and the UK specifically. A little bit behind the US, but doing a ton of really good stuff. The tech teams there are awesome. The founders there are awesome. Big markets. And then we partnered with a writer, Melody, to launch Headlines. And that's the mental health and wellness psychedelic space. And again, it's, we think that industry is going to be massive. Having the voice and the distilling the information, writing about these things, being the source for, you know, 100,000 plus people is very, very important for the long-term model of us, which is investing and building more and more valued assets over time.
What are some nuances that you realized that come from podcasts? And I mean by that, I noticed when we were doing podcasts at Terra, a lot of people that wanted to work at Terra were looking at a lot of the podcasts, and I was never expecting that this would be the case. At the scale that you guys are today, what do you see?
Yeah, it's what we hear from founders that are on the podcast, where, you know, investors, team, people that want to work there, partners reach out to them and say, I just heard you on the podcast. And because Joe is so phenomenal at interviewing and getting the information down, it's like helping them pitch themselves, essentially. So it was, for us, it was always provide a ton of value for the guests, help them tell their story, help them get that word out there to the right people. And then obviously provide that value to the community. And what you're seeing with podcasts is they're spending a half hour, 45 minutes, hearing somebody talk about their thing, hearing Joe be there and talk about it. You build a relationship with them. And again, it's consistency. We've never not had a podcast drop on a Tuesday. So even during the holidays, even during the stuff, like, it's always coming. They come to kind of rely on that and spend that time. You build a super deep, I think between the newsletter and the podcast, both, especially the way we produce the newsletter being in-depth content, kind of that research side, you build a very deep relationship with people. Especially the newsletter comes from my personal email address. My email is anthony@fit.co. So when you get it, it's like mine. And then Joe is the podcast. And as it's grown and as we built this community, people are like, you know, we come to you for this. We trust you. We know you. Even though we haven't met, we feel like we know you guys. And that value long term is just absolutely insane. To have people, we're super fortunate and lucky that there's that many people that want to read and listen to the things that we produce and the content we produce. And we're fortunate that it just builds an absolutely insane trust and value with an audience. And like you said, if you're going to work with us, if you're, it's always been us saying we want to put our best ideas out there. It's not like hide. That's why I hate when someone says they want to send me something, like, oh, let me, can you sign an NDA? It's like, no, I put my best ideas out there literally publicly for everyone to read, because I think that's going to bring the value back in the end.
And you had some of the best guests very early on. I think a lot of people struggle to get really interesting people very early on their podcast. What was your approach? For example, I remember that one of your first podcasts with Will from Whoop, it was very early on. How can people learn from your approach here?
I think it stems to, it's not hard to get podcast guests, honestly, because people want to tell their story and market and grow. And you don't have to be some massive podcast. You just got to kind of shoot your shot and get it out there. And then the other side too was consistency as your career. When we're doing Fit Insider, Joe and I have been in the industry for a long time. We've built a reputation. We've built a thing. We've been consistent from day one, from the day we opened our first gym until now. Everything we did, everything we've built was consistent. So we knew some of these people, or we've interacted with these people, and they could at least know and trust us enough. So that mixture of like, we know what we're doing, we are going to deliver, you've seen our work, and then we want to help you tell your story. They're going to come on. It's their job. As a founder, as a person that's out there building, it's your job to get the word out and help build your thing. So you're helping them as much as they help you. But I think on the podcast side, at least, it's super important to do it right, use the right software, make sure that you are organized, the calendar invite, the questions, the time, the prep. Like, we have a what to expect page that is all of the questions and things that you would need. And every, whether it's through a PR firm or we talk directly to the founders, they're like, thank you guys are so organized. Like, this makes it so much easier. We lay out the questions, we lay out the information, we give them the time, we tell them when it will come, we get them the clips, we get, like, if you do it and produce it, and you don't need a team, but you just have to do it right and consistently, it'll grow, people will come, and that's the only way you win, whether it's a newsletter or a podcast.
Exceptional. Third is the fund. A lot of people have been speaking about what you guys are doing. I think we spoke a few times about the fund. How can people find you today? Mm-hmm. And what are you excited about in terms of the companies in this space, and what are you investing in?
Yeah, in terms of finding us, it's on site, Fit Capital. I think it's fitcapital.com. If you go to that, you can check it out. And originally it started as Joe and I. You know, we were fortunate that we've built and sold some companies and we've done well, and we always love backing founders, so we wanted to angel invest. And that grew into a more organized fund of our own capital, kind of like a mini family office of us investing. And now we're partnering with some large partners that we'll be announcing soon to continue to invest at a larger scale. And I mean, shoot, if anyone's doing anything and wants to get it to us, my email is anthony@fit.co. Reply to the email when you get it, and just tell me what you're up to. So, but from a what we're looking for, it's me specifically, but you know, us as a brand, I'm very passionate about like understanding nutrition and obesity, metabolic health, food as medicine, lifestyle medicine, that type of stuff. I say this and it sounds kind of crazy. If you look at the problems that we're facing as a society, right now there's a lot of conversations around climate change. I think obesity and the general health of the public and the average person in the United States, where you are at, everywhere out there, if we don't find a way to adjust how we live and the foods we consume and the way that we operate and how inactive we are, we aren't going to be able to carry the cost of that as a society long term. It just doesn't make sense. It is a massive problem that is growing every year. We publish the stats every year, whether it's kids and how the problems are with obesity and inactivity, or and it's all preventable. The diseases, the things that come from that is 100% preventable. It is absolutely insane. So I look at that as one of the biggest problems facing us as a, so trying to back and find ways to invest in companies that can change that is one of the number one things for us. And it's nutrition, obesity. It's also aging well. It's not about longevity. It's not about being, I feel like the longevity industry has bad reps. There's like Dave Asprey and all these weirdos that are doing just crazy shit. And it's not about living an extra year and wearing red light glasses or whatever. It's about, you know, how do you improve the quality of life? How, as you get older, do you not have a hunched over back, and can you move, and can you play with your grandkids, and can you actually be active? So aging well, improving that quality of life and longevity, healthcare 2.0, proactive personalized care, incentivizing healthy behaviors. How, I don't think healthcare is going to fix the problem. I think it has to be other companies that interact with healthcare and butt up right against the healthcare industry that can make these changes and hopefully get acquired and build and integrate into healthcare. But how do you build this proactive personalized care? And then high performance is a big one. Health optimization, data-driven insights, wearables, what you guys do. How, but not for, you know, the elites, not for the few. How do you take that and distill it down and make it a thing that the average person understands besides their step count or besides their sleep score? What can come from that? And then how does that connect to healthcare? Another big one, which is why we launched Headlines, we call it Eliminating Stigmas, mental health, women's health, condition-specific care, all of these areas that were overlooked, not funded properly, not paid attention to. How do you help build those up and make those businesses succeed? Because they should, and they could easily. And the last one is, it's funny, we're called Fit Insider, we're called Fit Capital. Fitness is a small part of what we do. We bundled it together as fitness and active lifestyle. And that's, you know, and, you know, working out in person, digital exercise. But more importantly for me, where my passion is, like recreation, community, we call it social fitness. Getting people moving, playing pickleball, run, hike, bike, be outside, adventure sports, all of that stuff. Those are the main pillars of what we do. And each one is just as important as the next. And we're really looking for, we invest very early on. We want to work with founders as soon as they have the idea. And it's been cool to see, you know, when we get pitch decks a ton, and our data is quoted in the deck as market, or our information is there. That's what we want. We want to help you find that data, plan that thing, put that together. We want to talk to you early on and help you get going. And our entire thesis is, because we've built companies in this space, because we've written about it and worked in it for so long, we can help you, you know, build that plan, build that strategy, help you get to market and avoid the speed bumps and the hurdles that you have very early, and hopefully have a higher level of success and outcome with us helping you.
But I believe you invest super early. And yes. How would you know when a founder is investable? Like, what characteristics are you looking for to know if a person is world-class?
Yeah, it's funny. I live in Pittsburgh. I'm from a small city. Didn't go to an Ivy League school, didn't go to a specific place, didn't have a network or a background in certain areas. So I think we have a really big leg up when it comes to investing, because we're investing in the team out of Atlanta. We're investing a team out of British Columbia. We're investing the team out of, we're not looking for big name investors. We're not looking for people that went to a certain school or people that had a certain background. What I'm looking for is somebody that spends the time to understand their market. You know, we get pitches all the time. We're the first and only. You're not. I've seen 50 of these. It just shows you're not doing the research. It just shows you're not spending the time. Some guy or girl who's perfect at pitching or has this bravado or approach to them. Have you spent the time? Have you done the research? Do you understand what you're building and why you're building it? Consistency, obviously, coming through this whole podcast. Do you have the perseverance and consistency to do this? Because that's the only thing that's going to make you win. Because, you know, as a founder, every other week you want to quit or you mess up or something goes wrong and you're like, shit. And I've seen people just drop. And in the end, I think that you win purely based off of perseverance and consistency in doing the work. So we always look at the opportunity, the market, the plan, their research, their data, their approach first. It has nothing to do with who they know, where they went, what they've done. It's all of those things. And then we spend time with that person and get to know them as an individual and see how they respond to input, coaching. Will they stick around? Will they do the work? And can we help them is a big thing too. We don't want to just invest and step away. It's, can we actually add value? Can we make introductions? Can we spend time working through the product? Being the first, you know, we invest in a company called AnyDistance, activity tracker, social community.
Also map, by the way.
So fun. And I was one of the first users of the app. I sent him a message early on, and he knew we are from reading our content, but it was, you know, hey, this is awesome. You have something here. When you're ready, let us help you. Let us know. And from that point on, we've been on their side and then invested and all of that stuff. So that's the story we want. We want to be involved. And Luke's based out of Atlanta. I think he's from UK. And he's a designer. He's built companies, he's done stuff, but he's not a fitness guy. He's not an activity guy. He wasn't the former whatever at Strava. It didn't matter. He was building something that was needed and he was building it in a unique way. And we saw it very long. We're like, we need to help this team. We want to back this team. And that's really our story all along. We make our decisions very fast when we see someone's information, hear their pitch, hear their story, because we want to back people doing good stuff.
Hmm. In the last podcast we've done, I was speaking with the CEO of Outside, Robin, and he brought up that his opinion is that in the wearable space, in the future, we're going to have all our clothing measuring in a way that it's our shirt is going to measure our heart rate, our pants is going to measure something else, our shoes is going to measure our force exerted, and like everything is going to be have to do something with wearables. Everything is going to have to do something with measuring data. What's your view on the world of wearables, and what do you think is going to happen here?
So all of that, all that technology he's talking about is already built or being built. It's there. It's being done. You know, we're based in Pittsburgh. There's a Carnegie Mellon's here. There's big universities. We were just at an event. Someone has the insoles that can track. There's been companies that have done it. I forget their names, but we've talked to a few of them. It's there. It exists. But why? Why are people, unless it connects somewhere, no, people aren't going to pay for that. Unless it adds a value, me tracking and knowing that thing, unless it can connect to my health or my doctor or my system or my thing and improve my life, why would I want to know that data? I wear an Apple Watch and that's it. And it's fun because I make sure I'm not late to a meeting, and I try to close my rings and I try to get my steps in. That's all I care about. But it's fun. It's something that I do, but it doesn't add an immense value to my life. So why would I do that if it didn't have that value? I get where he's coming from. And I think eventually it makes sense to do that, but we already have more data than we know what to do with, and we can't use it right now. And it's not really getting us anywhere. So unless a company can come and connect that to something and show the value, and then also more importantly, maybe the rich, maybe the high performers. I have a disdain for a lot of products and companies out there that are building things that the average person can barely afford to live in the United States. I'm assuming everywhere too, but like the data I always look at is in the US. The average person, they are, you know, a lot of people talk about people not being healthy because they choose not to be healthy, because they choose to be lazy. No, it's because they work two jobs. It's because they don't make enough. They make a certain hour and they have to work and they have kids and they have a family and they don't have time to spend $100 a month on the gym and, you know, a Whoop subscription and another thing. That's the problem. They're not going to wear wearable clothing because they're barely getting by, and healthcare isn't free. So it doesn't connect anywhere, and they're not paying for that doctor. They're skipping the doctor's visit. So unless as a society, something changes, I don't see a vast majority of people wearing these things. Some, yes, the top X percent might, but even then it's recreational use at best until there is some immense value built into the chain of why am I wearing this and why am I doing this? And I have seen hundreds of decks of companies in this space, and I've yet to see one that was like, oh, this device connects to this thing that goes to the health and like actually changes my life and value, besides specific medical devices that I don't think are out there yet in the public.
I think it's like early days of phones. It's like, I remember Nokia phones like back in the day. They had all these hardware options. Like I could get so much data, but I had no clue what to do with it. And then you had all these ecosystems that were built on top of an iPhone and on top of an Android. And they made use of that information. They made use of like explaining to you exactly how you should use. Yeah, I had 3G on the phone. I had an Internet Explorer, but there are no websites. But then you just got a lot of more websites. You just got a lot more applications that found use of all that information. Now, having said that, what should we expect? Like, what's the future of FitInsider? What are we going to see next year? What are we going to see in 5 years?
Absolutely. We have a ton of exciting stuff planned, starting to hire and grow the team, starting to focus on, there's two ends. There's platform, which is the content and the media and all that stuff. And on the platform side, we are focused on adding more value for companies and founders. We're focused on building services and assets, whether it's on the hiring side, on the press release and news side, all of that stuff. There'll be more development, more content. We're going to launch a premium membership. We're going to take our deep dives and we're going to make them reports in long form content and, you know, put them out in a unique way and spend the time, because, you know, a hard work with the newsletter is it can be much longer and have much more information, but not everyone's going to read because it's long already. We're here all the time. I have to set aside a half hour to read the newsletter. So we want to split that out and make it more long form and more content, you know, build a community around these founders and these executives and get them, whether it's, you know, AMAs, content, spending time to produce more to help drive the industry forward on what we think is important, which is data, research, and understanding of what's happening. And then we're looking to acquire. There's other newsletters, founders building stuff, content, all of that. We want to bring them under the fold. When it comes to health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, active lifestyle, recreation, if you're an industry publication, if you want to write or build in the space, you want to create in the space under that banner of like what we do at Fit Insider, let me know, because we want to bring in the team and do it together. And then on the capital side, it's raised multiple funds with a partner, like I said, we'll announce soon, very large family office group that is out there doing really cool stuff in the sports category. We want to do that in health and wellness with them. And it's back founders early. And the long-term goal, hopefully, is pre-seed investing, later stage investing, and then what we're calling a co-founder, like venture studio. If founders come early enough and want our team and our people and our network to help, we can help create those companies from not just when they're ready to raise a pre-seed round, but from the idea stage and work with them then. So all of that combined, we call it the kind of venture media flywheel. We want to build and support the space, grow the space, lead the way from research content, hiring, understanding news, everything, and then be able to back and support companies through the capital side.
Awesome. Antoni, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.